You're listening to another episode of Total Talk Nonsense with John and Scott.
All right, Total Talk Nonsense with John and Scott. I'm John.
I'm Scott.
And this is episode 159, Scott.
That's right, John. 159 recorded on a Monday night.
On a Monday.
I'm mailing it in.
Mailing it in. You sound great, man.
Out of sight.
Yeah.
Super Bowl was yesterday, last night. Did you watch the game?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I thought it was one of the best Super Bowls I've ever seen.
I did too, and you know, right at the point, there was a point in the third quarter when I was like, geez, this is the worst football game I've ever seen. It was right after the Steelers drove down the field and mostly on the Cardinals' penalties.
Oh, yeah, I was like,
and they field goal, and then there was a penalty, and they got the first down, and they stopped them, and they ended up kicking a field goal again.
Right.
Like, this is the worst Super Bowl ever. And then they turned it around after that. Very exciting.
Yeah.
You know, the thing I was, I don't know if you noticed, but the one receiver, Fitzgerald on Arizona, when Arizona, he's, you know, doing the cross and looking to the skies and thanking the Lord.
Yeah.
And Pittsburgh, what was the guy's name? There was a couple of guys that were doing the same thing on Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh eventually wins the Super Bowl. Very dramatic finish.
Yeah, right.
Miraculous play, John. Miraculous. And now the Pittsburgh players really believe that God is on their side.
God is on their side.
But what about Fitzgerald and the rest of the Cardinals that were praying and looking up to the Lord? What do they think today?
They didn't pray hard enough, Scott.
Is that what it is? They didn't pray hard enough?
Yeah.
I should have prayed harder?
That's right,
and
Scott.
And then we would have won the game? If I only prayed harder?
The only reason for evil is the absence of God.
I just wonder how that works out.
There is no cold, only absence of heat. There is no darkness, only absence of light. There is no evil, only absence of God.
One could say there is
only
absence of darkness.
You dropped off. What'd you say? One what?
One could say that there's only absence of light. I can't remember what I said.
I don't think you could say that because you can't observe.
Dropped off. How come I dropped off? Should I call back? Should I hang up and call back?
I don't know what's wrong with this shit line.
Skype. I guess you get what you pay for.
You want me to call you back?
Did I call you first?
Yeah.
I mean, we could try it.
Yeah. Let me give it a shot.
You got some Jeopardy music or something to play while you're...
No, I'll just cut this up.
All right, man.
Yeah, hold on.
Okay. What's up, man?
I love when my family runs around and they're stomping their feet upstairs. So, yeah.
You should have like an on-air sign up there.
I'm gonna, man. And I'm gonna electric fly the floor. I electrify it.
So the other thing about the Super Bowl, did you see Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band?
Yeah,
I thought that was great.
I did, too.
You know, and as far as Bruce Springsteen is concerned, I never really got into Bruce Springsteen, you know? I like his older stuff.
Right.
What was the album he came out with, Born in the USA?
Born in the USA! Yeah.
I never got into that at all.
I've never been a Springsteen fan, but yesterday.
Yeah, so the guy comes out, he's got 12 minutes, he does like a medley of songs. But he's still performing.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. I have new respect for Bruce Springsteen, especially when he humped the camera.
Right, when he flew and had his balls hit the camera. Yeah. That was great.
So the guy's having fun. The only thing I was critical of was he's got to cart his wife out there to play guitar, you know?
Right.
It just reminds me of Lennon dragging Yoko to the studio and Paul McCartney with that Linda McCartney taking her on tour. And now Springsteen's got to prop his wife up, give her a guitar at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It just seems like she just married the guy so she could play at the Super Bowl, you know?
Yeah. Well,
come on.
So what?
if we got a gig at the Super Bowl, hypothetically,
yeah,
would you give your wife a guitar and have her play?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt, man.
Well, anyway, the guy from
I'd
the
have her show one of her boobs with a star wrapped around the nipple, too.
Nice. The guy from the Trib, a music critic named Greg Kot.
Greg
had this
Kot?
Greg Kot. What did he say? He said Super Bowl halftime, or he said, Super Bowl halftime entertainers, once an afterthought, are now part of the NFL sales team. Springsteen, who once wouldn't have been caught dead performing an event sponsored by a multinational tire manufacturer while being squeezed between television ads, was in an affable, we're here to entertain mood with his E Street Band. So he goes on to say that he tried to squeeze 3 hours of a typical high-energy Springsteen concert into 12 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't know. The guy had 12 minutes to play. He yeah. played 12 minutes.
What was he going to do?
Right.
One long yeah. song like a jam at the Beacon?
Let's cancel the second half of the Super Bowl because I'm going to play for the next 3 hours. What does Greg Kot want? What are his expectations? What a douche.
What a Kot sucker.
Springsteen's music has taken on a political dimension over the years, but the aspect of his art was muted in favor of a more celebratory performance. So what, he want Springsteen to cry and shout political statements? What did he want?
Yeah.
The performance is bristled with energy, even as Springsteen was a bit breathless and clearly not up to nailing the high notes.
He never has. What?
Right. When did he ever do that?
That's how he sings. He's like Joe Cocker.
Then came a truncated Working on a Dream with a gospel choir, an advertisement for his latest album. Isn't that the whole reason he would do such a thing? You know? Isn't the whole reason you agree to be at Super Bowl halftime is right. to promote yourself? It's a promotion.
Yeah. At some point, you got to pay the bills.
The singer camping it up as he worked a bunch of football references into a song about a washed-up baseball player. The set bottomed out when a performer popped on stage wearing a football referee's uniform and signaled penalties while the singer and Stevie Van Zandt shared vocals. I actually thought that was funny because Stevie Van Zandt is probably one of the worst backup singers I've ever heard. I thought that was appropriate that the guy come out and flag him. Yeah. He should have dragged him off.
Yeah. Flagged him off.
Do they hand out 15-yard penalties for shameless jive?
What's wrong with this? This guy sucks, man.
It was an example of Springsteen's humor at its cheesiest, perhaps entertaining to an audience who would just as soon be dipping into guacamole. Okay, so now he's bringing us into his review, saying that we're a bunch of douchebags. Yeah. But a letdown for fans who expected a more convincing musical statement from one of the greatest live performers of the last three decades, John. What a joke. His final statement, this was Springsteen as a song and dance man, an accomplished artist reduced to pandering.
What an ass.
Yeah, Greg Kot's a douche.
What does he know?
He doesn't know anything. What are critics, John? People who can't do it themselves.
Right.
That's right. That's different from a skeptic. That's what I
right. mean. Get that straight, man. Make sure you define those lines.
That's right, man.
we don't criticize. We're skeptical. Right.
That's right.
That's right.
All right. Now, last week we talked about Einstein as an atheist.
Yeah.
Do your homework.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. I have two things to say about it, and I will turn it over to you. I guess these will be our closing arguments. The question is Einstein an atheist? That's the question.
Yeah.
Would you like to go first, or would you like me to go first?
I thought I did, didn't I? Last week.
Last week? Okay, so you have no follow-up then?
Yeah.
You do?
Well, what do you mean, no follow-up? I just said that, what did I say? He's not an atheist. You said, yes, he is. No, he's not. I'll get my evidence.
All right, so I have my
evidence. You get your evidence. That's how it went down.
You ready for my evidence?
Yeah.
Well, before I get to my evidence, I just want to point out that Richard Dawkins, Sir Richard Dawkins, John, who I spoke to on the Penn show, dedicates an entire chapter on why Einstein was an atheist. So does Hitchens. I don't think it's a whole chapter,
or
though.
Or pantheist, yeah.
But here is a... this is taken from a letter that Einstein wrote to Guy Rayner Jr. on July 2nd, 1945, responding to a rumor that a Jesuit priest had caused Einstein to convert from atheism. And it's quoted by Michael R. Gilmore in Skeptic, Volume 5, Number 2. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Here's what Einstein said. I received your letter on June 10th. I have never talked to a Jesuit priest in my life, and I am astonished by the audacity to tell such lies about me. From the viewpoint of a Jesuit priest, I am, of course, and have always been, an atheist.
Wait, repeat that. Repeat that.
From the viewpoint of a Jesuit priest, I am, of course, and have always been, an atheist.
So it's conditional.
It is conditional. And I think if you read Dawkins and Hitchens, they tell you why it's conditional. Because Einstein was in a unique position, being a celebrity for his theories, but also in consideration to be the president of Israel. So he had to walk a fine line to what he could really say about his beliefs and what he couldn't.
Right.
So that's it. That's all I have to say. Was he an atheist? Who knows? I don't know. He's made other statements where, for example, he said, the bigotry of a non-believer is, for me, nearly as funny as the bigotry of a believer. So he made that statement about other atheists. So, you know, he also did talk a lot about God and spirituality.
Yes.
And
he suffers the same fate as Sam Harris at the end of his book, The End of Faith. And to some degree, Dawkins, which calls pantheism sexed up atheism, which I fucking hate that, because it either is atheism or it's not. Don't sex it up and make it ambiguous by saying, well, it's pantheism. He's a pantheist. So am I.
I don't even know what that means. How do you sex up atheism?
Well,
you whip your cock out? What do you do?
To paraphrase Dawkins, he's basically saying that to be an atheist is not good enough, because it just somewhat promotes attacks of religion, where pantheism should open up a dialogue, and pantheism is more a recognition that God is really nature, or God is synonymous to the universe. So whenever a pantheist or atheist talks about God, they're talking about the universe or nature.
I see. Yes, very good. Whatever that means.
I read that Einstein said in the expanded quotable Einstein, I don't know if you have that. I don't have it.
Do not have that, no.
In the view of such harmony in the cosmos, which I, with my limited human mind, am able to recognize, there are yet people who say there is no God. But what makes me really angry is that they quote me for support of such views. So he's giving the finger to Dawkins. Fuck you. Don't use me as your tool to...
tool.
for your atheism, okay? I did read a weird thing, something very interesting, and then I drilled into it more. I'll read it to you first, and then I'll read you a little history about it.
Okay.
the question is, this came out of Time magazine. Do you believe in God? Is the question to Einstein. He says, I am not an atheist. I don't think I can call myself a pantheist. The problem involved is too vast for our limited minds. We are in the position of a little child entering a huge library filled with books in many languages. The child knows someone must have written those books. It does not know how. It does not understand the languages in which they are written. The child dimly suspects suspects a mysterious order in the arrangement of the books, but doesn't know what it is. That, it seems to me, is the attitude of even the most intelligent human being toward God. We see the universe marvelously arranged and obeying certain laws, but only dimly understand these laws. Now, this came from Time magazine, which is quoting Glimpses of the Great from 1930 by G.S. Varick. And he also rewrote the Glimpses of the Great in a New York Post or Washington Post. It wasn't Washington Post. I can't remember. The Post article, What Life Means to Einstein. It turns out this G.S. Varick guy was a Nazi sympathizer and propagandist. But Einstein never goes on record to correct this guy. So I don't know if what he said is true or he just wrote this BS.
Well, one of the points that Dawkins and Hitchens makes is that just think of 1963 when Lenin made the comment that they're more popular than Jesus Christ. And there was a tremendous backlash, especially in the southern states here in the United States.
Right.
Now go back to 1945 and imagine what the backlash would be if Einstein came out and publicly stated that he was an atheist or he didn't believe in God. So I think they made a good argument that he would kind of tap dance around these direct questions and kind of be ambiguous about it. In public interviews, but in this private letter that somebody dug up, he did say he was an atheist. But again, John, you pointed out it was a conditional atheist.
Yeah.
So who knows? I don't know.
Exactly. Who knows? But the thing that gets me, and I guess I have to agree with Dawkins, because I sort of do have some sort of feeling about some sort of spirituality. Maybe it's just a connection with all things because we're made up of all the same materials, but I don't want to call it sexed up atheism. I still don't believe in God. No personal God, no universal God, no God any way you look at it.
Right. And I guess that's the thing is when you mention personal God, not only personal God, but any God that's been put forth and defined by man so far doesn't come close to what I would perceive as a God if one existed.
Right. Exactly. And like you said, Einstein was talking about, he was tap dancing around the subject, and rightly so, because I think he thought the more important issues are the work I'm doing, not what I believe as far as mysticism and, you know,
fairy tale
the Easter Bunny, John, Santa Claus. Right.
All right, so that was a nice exchange of ideas, John, without the tension that was in the 158 podcast.
What tension? I don't know what you're talking about. I was very relaxed. I was yawning. I was so tired.
What else do we have? As long as we're speaking about science, would you like me to continue on the science? I have some more science.
Yeah.
Science.
Oh, right. Science. Sorry.
And then we'll get to religion. Science. Oh, the one other thing that there's a new phrase on the interwebs, John.
What is it?
If you've seen it, it's a new phrase making its rounds on the interwebs.
Yeah.
Science flies you to the moon, John. Science flies you to the moon. religion flies you into buildings.
Oh, nice. That is a good one.
That is a good one. Oh, so the only I do have a science story, but before I get to that, Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Skeptic's Guide. It's a podcast I listen to.
Right.
If you listen to episode 185, Micho Kaku is on as a guest on episode 185.
Nice.
Now, Micho Kaku talks a little bit about Einstein. He talks about Niels Bohr. He talks about string theory. And basically, he throws Einstein and Bohr under the bus.
Whoa.
And he goes on to say, because one of the Skeptic's Guide of the Universe people asks him, well, what is the notion that string theory cannot be tested? And Michio Kaku says, people that believe that are silly, and it can be tested. And I'm going to tell you how it can be tested. And he goes on to talk for 20 minutes, and I'm going to bring some of those clips in next week. He says it can be tested, but then when he explains the test, they really don't make any sense at all. And
well, they are part of his thought experiment, Scott.
When he was finished, he said, now you got to remember, this theory is still evolving, so we really don't know anything. But yet he's making statements that it can be tested. So I'll bring some Michio Kaku clips in. I'm also going to reach out to the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe because I don't think they took a skeptical approach to what he was saying. I think they just bought it line and sinker, hook, line, and sinker. And I think that's because, you know, this Michio Kaku is a big name in science.
Yeah.
He's a big name in science. He's written a lot of books. But he bases his whole premise on string theory.
The math.
So string theory says some interesting things about the subatomic universe. 11 of them, John. There's 11 of them.
Yeah, right.
But now when they're extrapolating that math and they're asking, well, what does it say about the universe on a grand scale? Now the new thought is that we're all holograms. You and I, the physical presence of you and I, are waves that happen to be colliding at the same time. And the universe is just a big hologram. That's what string theory tells us.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a bunch of shit.
Never know. It's just a bunch of shit.
So look forward to that in episode 160, some Michio Kaku clips. Michio Kaku. The one science story I have, John, is out of The New Scientist, one of my favorite science publications.
To make fun of.
Here's a study. I'm going to read right from The New Scientist. Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Little girls may be made of sugar and spice and all things nice, but their armpits smell of onions. And while free of slug or snail odors, men's armpits pack a powerful, cheesy whiff. That's the conclusion of research in Switzerland involved taking armpit sweat samples from 24 men and 25 women after they had spent time in a sauna or ridden an exercise bike for 15 minutes. The researchers found marked differences in the sweat from men and women. Men smell of cheese and women of grapefruit or onion, says Christian Starkman, a company of Firmenich, a company in Geneva that researches flavors and perfumes for food and cosmetic companies. So this is science paid for by a corporation that is looking into perfumes.
Ah.
Women smell like onions. Men smell like cheese. Have you ever smelled like cheese?
No, I don't think so.
I've smelled really bad on occasion in TP, our good friend TP. Smells really bad often.
He smells like garlic.
But he's never smelled like cheese. I've never smelled like cheese.
Maybe it's like Parmesan.
Parmesan?
Parmesan cheese.
Some cheese we're not familiar with. Some Swiss cheese.
Yeah. Swiss.
That we're not familiar with. So you're saying if we put Tony on a plane and flew him over to Switzerland, he would get off the plane and people would say, oh, you smell like Swiss cheese. rank.
Or Fromunda cheese.
Fromunda?
Yeah, Fromunda, your balls.
And women don't smell like onions. I've never smelled a woman that smelled like onions.
Oh, I
have. What are they talking about?
They don't smell like onions. They smell like ass.
The New Scientist will publish anything. It's unbelievable to me.
Well, that's why they're called new.
It should be called dumb.
Dumb science.
Dumb science.
We should email them. Get them on the show.
Right on.
We need more guests. Everybody says we need more guests.
Do they? Who says that? I've never gotten that message.
No?
No.
I saw it on the forum.
Oh, yeah?
So, I have a bunch of calls. We got a bunch of calls, three of them.
Bunch of calls.
To play later. And what else do we got? I saw a movie.
Did we want to go for predictions, Pat Robertson and Sylvia Brown?
Oh, right.
I sent you some links. I don't even know if they work or not.
Are they old?
But basically, I don't even know if we have to play them. I mean, it's a joke. They didn't get anything right. Here's the one thing that no psychic predicted. Not one psychic. And you think that this event would send a huge psychic ripple through the universe.
Right.
Not one psychic predicted a black president. Not one.
Not one.
Pat Robertson didn't predict it. Sylvia Brown didn't predict it.
I noticed there's a lot more black commercials on TV now.
Is that the case, like, for example, when you go buy a new car, right?
You see everybody's got the same car as you.
Car. So is that the effect that you're experiencing? Now that we have a black president, you're seeing more black commercials?
Yeah, that could be. I see more black people outside, too.
I was at work, working out in the little exercise thing at work, and they have a bunch of TV monitors. And Barack Obama comes on. He's on the news, right?
Yeah.
And I still can't believe the guy's president.
I know. I'm
looking at him, and he's talking to Matt Lauer or somebody. And I'm thinking, that guy's president.
And he's
really, running the country.
Yeah. And he's super smart, although he kind of got duped with this bailout package. He talked to the Republicans, and they said, yeah, take this out, this out, this out. We'll vote for it. Okay, take it all out. They didn't vote for it. So they could say, if it doesn't work, well, they got what they wanted taken out. And then if it doesn't work, then they can say, see, we told you. That's why we didn't vote for it. If it does work, though.
What a bunch of dicks. It's not going to work. I'm just waiting for the economy to crash.
Yeah.
It's going to be brutal. We're stocking up on food.
And guns.
I get a hit up the father-in-law for half his stash.
You want to listen to Sylvia Brown? Financial predictions for 2008?
Sure. Let's hear her financial. Let's hear how stunningly wrong she is.
This is the worst year they've had in a long time. Financially, raise your hand. Take a look at the... Wait, but look at the audience. Everybody look around for a second. Because you're not alone. We all had some issues last year, right? So, Sylvia, what's going on? The credit card interest rates, the house rates, the data rates, everybody...
You know, I put these out in October, and before I put them out, some of the things happened, like lowering the interest rates. And I said, and the banks were going to come in and give people help on foreclosures, and they are.
So is the housing market going to now get stronger?
Yeah, it will. Certainly will.
Yeah, it will.
The problem is some of these moguls will come in and buy up all the foreclosures, and they'll get richer.
Okay, now how about the job market? Because the job market's
awful. Which is good for Michigan, because, you know, Michigan went flat like Silicon Valley did, is because they're going to start these new hybrids. So that's going to bring up automotive industry.
How about this? How about, the stock market, come on with it. Is it going to be good, bad, what?
It's just, it's like a roller coaster. I think that if you're going to deal in stock, I would look at medical stock, but I wouldn't do anything unless you research it, because it's just in a terrible mess. I mean, up one day, down the next, up, down. You can lose, gain. I mean, you'd be...
All right, do we got to hear any more of this? Because this is just like...
I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I think we played this right when she made the predictions, and we were laughing at how ridiculous it is.
Well, what does she do?
Oh, the stock market's like a roller coaster. That's a prediction?
No, yeah. Here, let me pick up the newspaper this morning, and then I'm just going to say everything I read. What a idiot.
Well, let's cover what she said. The banks will provide help on foreclosures. Well, that didn't happen.
No.
They got bailed out by the government, didn't do anything for a homeowner. No. The housing market is going to recover, John, in 2008. That didn't happen.
Nope.
It dropped like 18%.
Like a lead balloon.
And then banks will buy up foreclosures and get rich. That didn't happen. Automakers will rebound. After the bailout, they'll rebound. Yeah. I mean, she got everything wrong. Everything wrong. She didn't even know that we're going to get a black president. You know, even on Montel Williams, you think Montel would have been excited about that news.
Flash.
But she doesn't say anything.
Nothing.
Because she's a joke.
The New York Times said by almost any measure, 2008 was a complete disaster for Wall Street, except, that is, when the bonuses arrived. Despite crippling losses, multi-billion dollar bailouts, and the passing of some of the most prominent names in the business, employees at financial companies in New York, the now diminished world capital of capital, collected an estimated $18.4 billion in bonuses for the year. This was the sixth largest haul on record, according to a report released Wednesday by the New York State Comptroller. How about that? They took the taxpayers' money and they just dished it out among themselves.
It's really despicable. It's ridiculous. Everybody's in it for themselves.
One
what a
for
joke.
You, what 1 million joke. For me. Yeah. Hey, let's hear what Pat Robertson had to say. He's predicting nuclear war.
Today's news. Old reliable Pat Robertson has made another grim prediction. This time it's a war in the Middle East, leading to nuclear strikes against coastal cities in the United States. And he says it'll all happen between Election Day and the inauguration. Really? In a prophecy posted on his website, Robertson says he believes Israel will bomb Iranian nuclear sites. Iran and possibly Syria will respond, then Russia will get involved, and then we get the nuclear strikes against U.S. coastal cities. Robertson is demanding fervent prayer to avert this catastrophe. The good news here is that Robertson predicted that we'd get nuked 2.5 years ago, too. He also predicted that Bush's second term would be, quote, victory after victory. He predicted a Russian invasion of Israel way back in 1982. Actually, scratch that. He didn't predict that. He guaranteed that. Robertson said that Ariel Sharon had a stroke.
Well, you know what happened is the W probably called him up and said, look, we're hatching this plan. Israel's going to nuke Iran. We're going to get involved. Russia's probably going to hit our coastal cities. Right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, all right, I'll use that. That's good. I like that. And then this economic meltdown happened that took Bush's attention away from his other plans. And that's when he's like, forget it. I don't want to attack Iraq and then cancel the elections, which is what we predicted, John.
Yeah.
We were wrong.
Because then I'm stuck with this mess. So just hand
I'm just
it off.
Fail. So, but Robinson didn't get the updated memo and he went ahead with his predictions. But there's always a catch. His was, we need fervent prayer, whatever that means. So it really worked. All his followers prayed really hard that our coastal cities didn't get nuked, and God answered those prayers.
I could hear him, too, at the sermon. I'd just like to congratulate all you because of your fervent prayer.
Yeah. What a joke. What a joke.
Douchebag.
Oh, you know what? Oh. It's a horrible segue to finalize science because it's science and religion.
Yeah,
I want to talk about. So I'm going to get back to that. I'm sorry. I apologize. What? But there was an article in Newsweek this week in Newsweek. And before I get to the article, let's just talk a little bit about science, okay? So science is continuing its evolution to provide solutions to real problems facing society and our species' survival, right?
Yeah.
Within the next 100 years, medical science may eliminate aging, cancer, the list goes on. Physicists are debating the universe's origin, John, and they're probing the solar system. I like that word, probing.
Probe, yeah. Bend over.
Killer asteroids. Our greatest economic times have occurred because of the advances of science and technology. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah.
Personally, John, I would be dead at the age of 36 right. with pneumonia if it weren't for medical science. And who knows what else, you know?
It's God's will, Scott.
But here's the latest article in Newsweek. This article discusses the lively debate occurring right now, John. You know what it's about?
No.
The resurrection.
Oh, of what?
At Harvard, a scholar named John Levinson is trying to bring back a belief in resurrection to the legions of Jews who insist on agnosticism, or at least on looser metaphorical interpretations. So the whole argument is, when I do get resurrected, am I going to carry my physical body with me? That's the whole argument.
Yeah.
This is what they're debating. They're spending time on this. Progressive
here he,
Jews and
here
Christians
he goes, folks. Here he goes.
Talk about it as a metaphor for spiritual renewal, or to explain it as an immortal soul returning after death to God. St. Augustine, in an effort to convince skeptics of the truth of resurrection, devoted himself to describing the benefits of the real resurrected body. Get this, John. In heaven, he wrote in City of God, you will be your perfect self, unblemished, and 30-something. If you are fat in life, you will become pleasingly thinner. If too thin, you will become robust.
Become fat.
According to Augustine, we will be in our physical bodies in the universe that has no dimensions, and we will know God without interpretation. Author Paula Fredrickson goes on to say, most recently of Augustine and the Jews, our bodies will be the very same as the ones we had in life, but buff and beautiful. What Augustine and today's Orthodox are talking about is compelling indeed, a heavenly makeover. From our point of view, faith is a radical belief. Miracles really do happen. This is what religious scholars are debating right now. Whether we're going to be buff and beautiful and carry our physical bodies into the resurrection, or whether that's a bunch of nonsense. We're going to be resurrected, but our souls will be resurrected, not our physical bodies. This is what they're spending their time on. It's unbelievable to me. Waste of time.
Here he goes, folks.
And here's what Einstein had to say about it. Neither can I believe that the individual survives the death of his body, although feeble souls harbor such thoughts through fear of or ridiculous egotisms. Right on, Albert.
Yeah.
Right on. What a waste of time. No. Why don't you get a degree in medicine and try to help people survive today instead of survive in fairy tale land and figure out if we're going to be buff? It's a joke.
So did you hear go ahead.
Hold on. If that's really the case, right? So I dedicate a lot of my time to health and physical fitness, John, and I am buff, all right? I don't need God to make me buff when I go to heaven.
Yeah, you're buff.
I'm like pissed off if I go to heaven and I'm buff and you're buff too, you know?
Yeah.
Because I worked at being buff. Well, you didn't work at being buff.
Right. How dare
you're gonna
me.
Be buff. I'm going to feel gypped. That's not fair.
No doubt.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you. That sounds like a raw deal right there.
It's a raw deal. It's a bunch of crap.
I want to hear him answer for that.
All right. Sorry about that digression.
Yeah. So did you hear lately what's going on with Haggard, Ted Haggard?
You know, I was skimming the on-demand channels in the neighborhood and somebody was watching a Ted Haggard documentary.
Yeah.
And I caught the whole thing.
Oh.
And I really feel sorry for the guy.
I know. I've never been on an interview in my life.
this guy was the head of a, he started the whole church, right? This yeah. one church that has like 150,000 members.
Yeah.
He gets caught. Was he doing blow or something? Was there drugs involved?
Methamphetamines.
Meth with some gay prostitute, and who knows what else they're doing. He's married. He has kids. The church that he created abandons him. How Christian of them.
Yeah.
They kick him out. They tell him, get the hell out of here. So they finally, a year later or something, they let him move back into town. When does the church have the authority to tell you you can live where they say you can live?
Right.
Where do they get off telling him he can't live somewhere? But they finally say, yeah, you can come. But he had to try to sell insurance and do anything to make a buck.
Yeah.
And you can tell when the guy's talking, you can tell he is completely confused. His whole life is built on faith in God. And then that same faith, nobody else shares, and they boot him to the goddamn curb because he's a homosexual.
What happened to turn the other cheek, man?
Right on.
Well, I got some audio clips of him and the news.
The documentary?
No. This is recently in the news. Apparently some audio came out from a kid who was, I guess, molested. They don't really say, but he was 14 at the time, and he wanted Ted to be his friend and his pastor, and Ted wanted to jerk off in front of this kid. And then
that I'm defending him, and then I hear this.
Yeah, and then he wants to, you know, do drugs with the kid. And then they found out about it, so the church paid him off. But don't worry, Scott, they didn't use parishioners' money. They have insurance for this kind of stuff.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
So they paid him off like $150,000 or something to go to college to keep his mouth shut. But then he read about this documentary and decided to blab to the I don't know if this was a documentary. There was some documentary about Ted Haggard, and he decided to blab the whole thing, and all of a sudden it hit the news media. And before he blabbed it, he emailed or sent a letter to the church and said, hey, by the way, I'm going to blab all this. So the new head came out and said a few words to the parishioners. Here's the AP story with some of that in the background.
What's the data? When did this happen?
Last week, I believe.
Oh, last week. Yeah. Okay. So these are new revelations.
Yeah, these are brand new. They're old, but it's a new revelation, but it happened years ago.
I see.
New allegations about the sexual behavior of Ted Haggard, a disgraced pastor of a Colorado church and former head of a national evangelical group. Grant Haas attended the New Life Church in Colorado Springs back when Haggard was the minister. Now he's telling Colorado Springs television station KRDO that Haggard once performed a sex act in front of him in a hotel room and sent explicit text messages.
So you deleted all those text messages?
Yes.
Wow, and you didn't save him in any other form?
He asked me if we were going to be godly or bad that night. Were we going to just hang out and be friends? Or was I going to go buy him porn and masturbate with him and take methamphetamines with him and let him show me all these things that he likes to do, you know, when he travels?
Haas has said he first met Haggard in 2005 when he was 22 years old.
I told him that night, I'm like, I just want you to be my pastor and my friend.
Haggard has issued a statement on the Haas allegations, apologizing for his inappropriate relationship with a church volunteer, but says it was a relationship that did not involve physical contact. Haggard's fall began in November of 2006 when a Denver male prostitute alleged a cash for sex relationship with Haggard. He then resigned as pastor of New Life Church and head of the National Association of Evangelicals. Haggard is 52, married, with 5 children. The church apparently struck a legal settlement with Haas, paying for college tuition and counseling, as long as he did not speak about the relationship. The new pastor at New Life told members of the congregation he is sorry about the latest allegations.
It's been my hope for
the 18 months I've been here that this wound would heal and that we wouldn't have to revisit the unpleasant parts of our past. But unfortunately, this week we've had to do that. And I want to tell you, I'm praying for you.
According to documents given by Haas to a local television station, he was to be paid $179,000.
Yeah, so...
Well, here's what. Well, first of all, you said the kid was 14.
He was so that at the time.
No, he was 22.
At the
they
time?
Said he first met Ted Haggard when he was 22.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought he was 14.
Yeah. I mean, you're putting Ted Haggard in pedophile territory there.
Oh, sorry.
The guy was a young adult. I mean, it's still wrong on so many levels. But it's not that wrong, John, as it would be if it was
the revelation of what you call.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And they make a deal with the kid and say, yeah, we'll pay for therapy. We'll pay for college. Just don't talk about it. And what does he do? He talks about it.
Yeah. Well, check the listen to this one. This is Larry King. It's not great audio. Talking to Ted Haggard, and he kind of confronts him, and he plays a clip of this guy who's talking about what they did in the hotel room with Ted Haggard sitting split screen to this kid. Wait till you hear this.
Is the revelation of what you called an inappropriate relationship between you and a young male church volunteer back in 2006. That was Grant Haas.
Yeah.
He told CNN about what happened.
I came back to the bathroom, back from the bathroom, and got in the bed with Ted, ready to go to sleep. And he pretty much asked me if it was okay if he masturbated in front of me or masturbated in the bed next to me. And, you know, I told him no, that would make me really uncomfortable. But, you know, he grabbed a bottle of lotion and he started masturbating. And at that point, I was frozen. I couldn't really believe that this was happening.
Who hasn't done that? Come on.
Well, next is a man? Do you mind if I masturbate? Because I got this
I
lotion
on
here.
I get on the train all the time. Excuse me.
Mind if I masturbate with this lotion? Oh. So his best buddy, James Dobson, you know who Dr. James Dobson is, don't you?
Oh, of course.
Father in the Family or whatever that name of that organization is.
Focus on the family.
Food
John.
On the family. Focus. Yeah.
On the table. Family.
The guy's a doctor. Do you know that?
Yeah. Doctor of what? Theology?
No.
That's not really
no.
Doctor. Medical doctor?
Yeah. He's a medical doctor. He was an associate clinical professor of pediatrics at the University of Southern California of Medicine for 14 years. He spent 17 years on the staff of the Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. In the Division of Child Development and Medical Genetics, Dobson is a licensed psychologist in the state of California. This is what he had to say on Larry King. They were talking about bouncing around the whole thing with Ted Haggard, and this is his view on homosexuality.
I don't blame homosexuals for being angry when people say they made a choice to be gay, because they don't. It usually comes out of very, very early childhood. And this is very controversial, but this is what I believe and many other people believe, that it has to do with an identity crisis that occurs too early to remember it, where a boy is born with an attachment to his mother. And she is everything to him for about 18 months. And between 18 months and 5 years, he needs to detach from her and to reattach to his father. It's a very important developmental task. And if his dad is gone or abusive or disinterested, or maybe there's just not a good fit there, what's he going to do? He remains bonded to his mother.
Is that clinically true, or is it
is,
theory?
It's clinically true, but it's controversial. What homosexual activists especially would...
What?
It's not clinically true. We'll back it up.
Yeah,
there's
right.
There's never been a study like that. You and I, John, well, you had a stepfather, right? I never had a father figure.
No. Not in the
I
beginning.
Like, it wasn't... Reality.
It wasn't until I was like 7 or 8.
Right. So what? How do you explain us?
So I'm
We're
gay.
Young boys, John. is what we are.
Well, your wife thinks we're gay, so.
Don't let anybody be a doctor. It's unbelievable to me that this guy could be a doctor. You know, I just read a study that out of Sweden, again, out of Sweden, John, they did MRIs and they found that males have symmetrical brains. I'm sorry, asymmetrical brains. Their right lobe is bigger. Females have symmetrical brains.
Brains.
But when they look at homosexual men, they have symmetrical brains. And when they look at lesbian women, they have brains like men. So there's obviously a biological, some sort of a genetic thing going on there. It's not a choice, and it's not an identity crisis.
Yeah.
it's completely biological. And well, not maybe completely. There's study after study. Every real doctor, real one, John, believes that it's based on a biological mechanism and not an identity crisis right. or a choice. And the reason it's controversial is because it's so goddamn stupid.
Well, you want to hear what Ted Haggard says about his homosexuality? Why? Well, he's asked. What?
I would love to.
He's asked point blank by Larry King, are you gay or whatever or something?
We've decided the Bible.
Oh, that's not it. Here it is.
What do you consider yourself, Ted? Are you?
Yeah.
Are you bi? Are you gay? Are you?
It's a great question. And I went through a year of seriously asking that after the scandal. And different therapists have said different things to me. My first therapist said, you are a heterosexual with homosexual attachments. And I wasn't sure what that meant. Now that we've processed this through, my current counselor says, you're a heterosexual with complications. And so I don't think the boxes work for me. I think I have some thoughts in my life and some processes in my life that just don't fit neatly into the boxes, which I think is true for a lot of people. And I know that I'm in a process. I'm changing.
He's confused is all.
Yeah, he's a heterosexual with complications. One of them being he likes to suck cock. Other than that, he's a heterosexual, John. I mean, how ridiculous. Why didn't somebody be honest with this guy? There is no God, and you are a homosexual.
No, I don't want to be. All right, well, don't then. Choose the bush. I don't know.
Choose the bush, John.
Yeah, that'll be a new T-shirt. Choose the bush. Yeah. You know, I wonder how many women have shaved and or waxed. Because there is no more bush in honor of. I'm curious.
I don't know. Maybe a lot. Yeah. Go ahead.
We are official inspectors, right? We have a license to inspect.
No, I haven't passed my examination yet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, you're still in the research point of it?
Yes.
You're still in...
I've taken my final exam to get my certification.
Your belt? Get your, your black belt? It's like Six Sigma, Scott, you know.
Six Sigma.
Yeah.
Right.
So, what do we got? We got... I guess we covered religion, didn't we?
Yeah, we covered religion. We covered science. I got some celebrity.
Oh, yeah.
Some saw a movie. I got movie news.
I saw a movie. Rock and Rolla.
Rock and Rolla?
Yeah.
That's the name of the movie?
Yeah.
I've never heard of it.
You never heard of it?
No.
It's a Guy Ritchie movie.
A recent Guy Ritchie movie?
Yeah.
You saw it at the theater?
No, I saw it on pay-per-view.
Pay-per-view, nice.
Pay-per-view. It's
never heard of it.
Yeah, it was when was it? 2008. 2008 movie. October 31st, 2008. It's a Guy Ritchie film. It stars, and this is what's weird. I don't know. I've seen these guys in a lot of films. Like Gerard Butler. He's like a Scottish dude. And Toby Kebbell, Matt King. Who plays the main guy? What's his fucking name? I don't know. Anyway, it's a movie. I'll just read the plot instead of trying to explain it. In London, a real estate scam puts millions of pounds up for grabs, attracting some of the city's scrappiest tough guys and its more established underworld types, all of whom are looking to get rich quick. While the city's seasoned criminals vie for the cash, an unexpected player, a drugged-out rock and roller, presumed to be dead but very much alive, has a multi-million-dollar prize fall into his hands. And basically what happens, you remember in like Pulp Fiction, they have that case they open up and it's, you know, it's...
Right. They never explain it.
Yeah, they never explain it. You don't see it. Well, in this movie, there's a picture. There's a painting that you never get to see, but everybody is enamored by this painting. And this huge Russian kind of mafia real estate developer has this painting, and he trades it for... he says the guy who's doing the deal with, the $7 million deal with, can have it until the deal is done. And the dude, it gets stolen from his house by his drugged out stepson. And, you know, it's kind of a Pulp Fiction-y. There's a bunch of little stories going on at the same time, but it centers around this money and the picture. And everybody trying to lie to each other to get the shit back, and it's pretty good. It's a pretty good film. And what's his name is in there? Jeremy Piven. He's in it.
Plays Roman. Jeremy Piven.
Roman. Oh, okay.
Sadie Newton is in it. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you give it how many Spiny Normans?
I liked it a lot. I give it 3.
3 out of 4.
Yeah.
And you recommend it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's
rock
just,
and roller.
There's just some weird, funny shit that goes on. one dude gets chased down by these Russians that are just unstoppable. You can't kill them. And they catch him, and they're about to kill the guy. They got their knives out and everything, but they decide to put on like this heavy metal Russian music and, you know, dressed down to their underwear and wear these like leather hats, and they're dancing around with the knives, and they get the guy tied up like they're gonna bang him before they do chop him up. And there's some little homosexual overtones throughout the movie that are pretty funny, which you'll just love.
I will.
Yeah,
I know I will.
So, yeah, I saw that. I thought it was good.
All right. So there's is 3 out of 4 Spiny Normans.
Rock and roll.
Rolla. Nudity? Any good nudity?
No.
Quality kills?
No, not really. I mean, they didn't. It's kind of violent, but they don't really show any. They show a little blood. You know, there's some beatings and some good beat downs, but. But all in all, yeah, there wasn't, there wasn't any really quality kills. Couple headshots. The one dude is really funny. The rock and roll dude, Johnny Quid. He gets really poetic.
I'll have to see what Ebert said about it, and then I'll decide.
Oh, jeez,
read it or not,
douche.
Oh, I was reading Ebert review. There's a new romantic comedy with, who's the chick from Jerry Maguire? What's her name? She married some country singer and they got divorced.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
She's in it and Harry Connick Jr.'s in it. It's set up in Minnesota.
Right.
So I'm reading the review and, and I really have a lot of respect for Roger Ebert. I like the way he writes. I like his criticisms. But he had this to say. I'm just pulling one line out of here, and it really bugs me. So he's reviewing this chick flick, and here's what he says. The real question is, do you like this sort of rom-com?
Rom-com? What's that? Romantic
that's
comedy?
Short, romantic comedy. So, you know, you got the sitcom. I mean, that's okay, right? Situation comedy?
Yeah.
Because situation is a long word, and not a lot of people can pronounce it.
Yeah.
Sitcom. I like that. You know, it's like something W would say, sitcom. But rom-com? Rom-com. That's lame. I got to tell you, I lost a little respect for Roger Ebert when he says rom-com. Yeah.
He gives it 3 stars.
Moving on with movie news. Ebert gave it 3 stars?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard this, but Drew Barrymore, Lucy Liu, and Cameron Diaz are set to return to the big screen as Charlie's Angels for a third film.
Oh, boy.
That's 6 years after the sequel, Charlie's Angels, Full Throttle. The trio is ready to go again. Barrymore says, I'm so into it. They're hard movies to make, but they're fun. They're also looking to add a fourth lovely lady to the mix.
Oh.
For the second sequel, which is set to be made sometime. Start shooting later this year. Also in movie news, Matt Damon. Talking about James Bond. Here's what Matt Damon says about James Bond. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Bond is an imperialist, misogynist psychopath who goes around bedding women and swilling martinis and kills. He's repulsive.
Wait a minute. Swilling martinis and what?
Killing people. Oh. He's repulsive.
So?
That's what I say about James Bond. I think that's pretty rude. You know? I think that's rude.
I think he's setting up for a crossover, man. Bond versus Bourne.
Possibly. Who knows?
Yeah.
Like, are we being pulled into like a WWF plot here?
A crossover, Scott. You would know that if you knew anything about comic books.
I don't, but I would.
Bourne versus Bond.
Oh,
Da-da, 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 da-da.
Did you get the celebrity news there, John?
Yeah.
Now, I sent you a clip.
Got it.
All right, hold on to that clip. I got one celebrity story, and then we'll get to that.
I got 2 Ashton clips, too.
Oh, right, right. Yeah. Really quickly, let's just talk about Michael Phelps. Have you heard about Michael Phelps?
Dude, man, no doubt.
So this is the guy who's the greatest Olympic athlete ever. He's a swimmer, American swimmer. He won 8 gold medals at the last Olympics, and he won 7 or 6 the Olympics before. He's got more gold medals than anybody. Sets world records. He's like a swimming freak, right?
Yeah.
This photo comes up of him with a bong, John. Do we have I think we have some audio from that. Do we have audio from that?
Do we?
Did you? I don't know, do we?
Of him doing a bong?
See, and to
a
me...
A bong, right?
Right.
Yeah, I got it here somewhere. I just closed my folders.
To me, accomplishing what he accomplished and taking hits off a bong, to me.
Yeah.
If you ask me, John.
He's what?
It's even more impressive.
Yeah.
Knowing what he accomplished after taking hits off this bong.
Well,
because some,
you know, my experience with doing a bong with a swimmer, I found that swimmers have the unbelievable ability to fill that chamber all the way up before they pull the carb, because I don't know what it is, their lung capacity, but I was impressed when I saw a swimmer, one Scott, do a major bong some years ago.
Are you talking about me?
Yeah.
No, you're talking about Dan,
I'm talking
right?
about you.
Me?
Yeah.
I remember Dan.
Long time
with
ago.
With a 3-foot bong.
No. Dan did a little tiny
6-inch bong and almost threw up in my house.
Foot one.
It was a little tiny one. You did the big ginormous one. We had to like fill it 4 times because you just kept going and going. So I just kept filling it and finally, I was like, "Oh, dude, you're gonna die, man!" And you're like, "Hey, man, this isn't doing anything to me, man." Don't you remember that? It's a long time.
No. You know, short-term memory goes, and there goes your long-term memory.
It's a long time ago.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
One of the guys at the party said when they did hand Phelps the bong, and it was a pretty impressive bong, that he knew exactly how to handle it. He didn't need any instruction whatsoever. So now...
good for him.
He's got some potential endorsement issues. Some of the people that sponsor him are saying it's not a big deal. We don't care. But the chicks on The View, Whoopi Goldberg was the only one standing up for him. And that Elizabeth Hasselbeck,
yeah,
raised the question, well, if he's going to do pot, what's to stop him from doing like enhancing drugs, like steroid stuff? Yeah, so pot's the gateway to steroids, John. I don't know if you know that.
This is why these fucking broads shouldn't have shows.
Yeah.
Or anyone of their ilk.
All right, moving on in celebrity news, John.
Dude, what happened to my bong?
I don't know. It used to be a staple on this show, John, a staple. Yeah.
Ugh.
I ran across this audio clip. This is Christian Bale, apparently on the set of Terminator 4.
Yeah.
And he's in the middle of a scene. They're shooting a scene. They're not pretending. They're not. I mean, the cameras are rolling. Well, they are pretending. And I don't know if the scene was very elaborate or if Christian Bale was totally into character, but some photographer just walks right into the scene.
I thought it was a lighting guy. Was it a photographer? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a photographer who just walks right into the scene. And Christian Bale knows the guy because he calls him by name.
Yeah.
But he loses his mind.
And he's completely irrational, too.
Yeah. Go ahead and play that clip, John.
Kick your fucking ass! I want you off the fucking set, you prick!
I'm sorry.
No, don't just be sorry. Think for one fucking second. The fuck are you doing? Are you professional or not?
Yes, I am.
Do I fucking walk around and rip down? No, shut the fuck up, Bruce. Do I want? No! No! Don't shut me up. Am I gonna walk around and rip your fucking lights down in the middle of a scene? Then why the fuck are you walking right through? Like this in the background. What the fuck is it with you? What don't you fucking understand? You got any fucking idea about, hey, it's fucking distracting having somebody walking up behind Bryce in the middle of the fucking scene? Give me a fucking answer. What don't you get about it?
I was looking at the light.
Oh, good for you. And how was it? I hope it was fucking good because it's useless now, isn't it? Fuck's sake, man, you're amateur. McGee, you got fucking something to say to this prick?
I didn't see it happen.
Well, somebody should be fucking watching and keeping an eye on him.
Fair enough.
This is the second time that he doesn't give a fuck about what is going on in front of the camera.
All right?
I'm trying to fucking do a scene here and I'm going, where the fuck is Shane walking in there? What is he doing there? Do you understand my mind is not in the scene if you're doing that?
I absolutely apologize. I'm sorry. I did not mean anything bad.
Stay off the fucking set, man. For fuck's sake. Right, let's go again.
Jog on.
Let's not take a fucking minute. Let's go again. And let's not have you fucking walking in. Can I have Tom put this on, please?
Hey, Tom Wardrobe, please. Can I have Tom Wardrobe?
You're unbelievable, man. You're un-fucking-believable.
number of times you're strolling and fucking around in the background. I never had a DP behave like this. You don't fucking understand what it's like working with actors. That's what that is. That's what that is, man. I'm telling you. I'm not asking. I'm telling you. You wouldn't have done that otherwise.
No, what it is looking at the light and making sure that
I want to fucking kick your fucking ass. You know, shut up for a second, all right? I'm going to go. You want me to go fucking trash your lights? Do you want me to fucking trash them? Then why are you trashing my scene? You are trashing my scene. You do it one more fucking time, and I ain't walking on this set if you're still hired. I'm fucking serious. You're a nice guy. You're a nice guy, but I don't fucking cut it when you're bullshitting and fucking around like this on set. Yeah, you might get it. He doesn't fucking get it.
I get it.
You might.
I get it.
He does not get it.
And good adjustments, okay? For real. Honestly.
No, I don't need any fucking walking. He needs to stop walking.
I
ain't the one walking. Let's get Tom and put this back on. Let's go again. Seriously, man, you and me, we're fucking done professionally. Fucking ass.
Whoa!
You got to pull some clips out of that.
That is the best, man. He is just... No! We're going to have him talking to Lily Tomlin.
It seems like it's not the first time that the guy walked on and ruined the scene either.
Director of photography should know better than that.
And he keeps coming up with the same excuse. Well, I was looking at the light. I'd get pissed off, too.
I'd be like, okay, at that point, you're not going to win this argument because Christian is just... insane. You go, dude, got it. I fucked up. I'll see you later.
If I'm the director, I'm going to pull him aside and say, hey, you got to put a fucking lid on that. If you want to go off on that, go off on me.
Yeah.
Because now everybody on that set
is
unbelievably tense. They don't want to fuck up. And it's not a good time. And I think that shows up on the camera at some point. Who knows? Maybe it'll work for him in Terminator 4. I don't know, but
yeah, is that what they're filming?
I think so.
You know, Jim Belushi used to bitch about how he hated doing John Hughes movies because Hughes would be talking on his cell phone and shit in plain sight of Belushi. So he'd be doing his bit and he'd be talking to the character and behind the character is the director Hughes just yapping away on the phone. Yeah, fucking call me. Yeah, all right, we'll have lunch. Yeah, all right. And you could like hear him, and Belushi gets so pissed at that. And he hated doing Hughes. I think he may have done just one or I know he did one. I don't know if he did two. Curly Sue, I remember he was bitching about this guy. But
well, and again, I mean, if this is a pattern with Christian Bale, when are people going to say, "Yeah, it's not worth it working with the guy"? I mean, the guy goes off on everything, and it's just not worth my time. I'll find somebody else.
Look, man, if the guy is bringing in $500 million or $1 billion in movie sales.
Yeah, and when do you draw the line? I mean, yeah, studios, you're going to give them everything you want.
Yeah, studios are going to say, you fucking work it out and you figure it out, or you're the one that's fucking fired. That's the way it's going to go down. So how about Ashton Kutcher?
Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah.
You remember when the chick called his phone?
Yeah.
And then somebody hacked his phone? That was hot.
You remember that?
I remember that. Now Ashton Kutcher is taking video of himself and posting it on the web. What a dope.
Yeah, what is that all about, man?
I don't know. He's dumb.
Here's him posting himself on the web. Apparently, his neighbor's building the house, and he's very upset about it because he had to wake up in the morning.
I'm just recording this for legal purposes, but I can also share it with the world, okay? It's 7:30 a.m., and I get to wake up in my bedroom to my fucking jackass neighbor. I don't know if I can say fucking food. To my jackass neighbor doing this next to my porch. And you see, this is my porch. This is my house. This is my deck. Right up there, that's my bedroom. This is where my dickweed neighbor has decided to be building a house at 7 a.m., pounding on steel and welding right next to my friggin' house. I woke up this morning to pounding, welding steel. I'm gonna lose it on this guy. I'm gonna lose it.
Lose it.
It's been going on for 4 months now. This guy's got another thing coming.
So Ashton, you know, after having a little breakfast and some time to think about it, he decided to post another.
No, he didn't. The guy heard about it and he said, hey, what the fuck are you talking about? You were doing construction at 6 a.m. I didn't say a goddamn thing. Oh. So shut your fucking mouth. And it just goes to show that Ashton Kutcher is retarded. 90% of the people on this planet get up. What time do you get up, John, to go to work?
5:30.
I get up at 6. People get up and they have to get their days going and get to work. Yeah. And these construction guys stop because, especially in the winter, they don't have a lot of daylight.
Right.
So,
right.
If they're starting at 7:30, to me, that's late. They're starting late.
Yeah.
And this pampered prick
has been.
He's going to complain about a guy trying to make a living. It's not like the owner of the house was on his roof banging on shit at 7:30. He hired people to do this job. What an ass.
This is my deck. Okay? I'm like, what?
Go back into your house.
Dick.
Make a sound room. Well, go to your home theater.
This is what he says afterwards.
Hello, citizens of the interweb. I've calmed down from my morning spaz out. You know, you're very vulnerable at 7 a.m. and I like my alarm clock to be a nice tune, maybe John Mayer or something sweet like that, as opposed to banging. But in light of the of reflection.
Did you hear what he said? John Mayer as opposed to banging. So he'd rather listen to a man singing in his ears than bang his girlfriend. Let's hear what he said.
Reflection. I just want to say I pledge to be more tolerant of my neighbor's hammering in the morning as he tolerated my construction at my home. Although I think that the thing is at 8 o'clock, not 7. I'm not gonna go into it. I'm really not gonna go into it.
Just did.
It was a fun morning, and I thank the Twitter Nation for being so understanding of what it's like to be woken up by the neighbors. So God bless. God bless. Why am I saying God bless? Bless you, my children. Bless the citizens of the interweb. I had fun this morning, so I hope you had fun too. Oh, hold on, somebody's clicking in. Let me just see who's here, who's watching.
Wait, listen.
Okay, maybe not. Maybe I just got an email. Who knows? Anyway, here at work, cranking away at things. There's a new Blog Girls episode up, if you want to check it out. Working on what the next cycle of True Beauty is going to be. That should be exciting. What else are we doing today? I'm getting ready to eat a salad. This is that's lunch.
Okay, I don't know.
Hello, citizens of the...
I'm getting ready to eat a salad. Who cares?
It's unbelievable to me. You know what we should do? We should make a video.
Yeah, I'm working here at home.
No, make a video. This is me getting up at 6 to go to work. And you know what pisses me off? Ashton Kutcher gets to sit around all fucking morning and not do a goddamn thing. And I got to go to work.
Bitch about it.
Yeah, and then bitch about it. I'm ready to lose it. I'm ready to lose it.
I'm
going to
lose it on this Jack Dickweed.
What a prick. And where's Demi during all this? Is she in some hypergenic chamber or something?
Hyperbolic.
Being mummified.
She's banging with the crew downstairs. Oh man.
So we have more Ashton to look forward to. I mean, is he going to keep doing this?
Oh yeah,
putting
out
video blogs.
I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it, Scott.
We'll have to check back to see what he's eating tomorrow. I mean, that's really going to make my day.
I'm having a salad. Take a look at it. And he shows the salad on the video. You're like, what? Oh, Jesus Christ. And somebody probably made it for him, his mom or something. What else? Oh, speaking of celebrity.
What do we got? We got calls. We got Andrew Spinnett.
Yeah. So speaking of
celebrity.
Yeah. Speaking of celebrity, this week, I like to watch David Letterman when I can. And this week, he had on Bill Hicks' mom. Because back in, 1993.
That's correct, 93.
Bill Hicks, did you see this show?
Yeah, well, I saw the, somebody posted the whole segment on YouTube or something, I saw that.
So, he wanted to make it up to the Hicks family, brought the mom on the show. What he had done in 1993 is he had Bill Hicks on the air, and he taped him. They taped the show, and he took the Bill Hicks bit off the actual broadcast because he thought it was going to be offensive. So to make it right, he brought the mom in and said, look, I fucked up. I don't know what I was thinking back then. This guy was a brilliant man. He died at a very young age. He was very funny. And tell me a little bit about him. She told some stories, some anecdotal stories, and he played the Bill Hicks stand-up routine from 1993, which I thought was fucking hilarious. Did you see it? Did you think it was funny?
Yeah, I saw it. I thought it started out a little bit slowly, and then I thought it picked up. I can't remember anything about it, really.
Well, he's really very controversial. He went off on a rant about, basically he said a bunch of celebrities should be shot. One was Marky Mark and,
his reality show.
Yeah, his reality show. We're going to hunt and kill, a has-been celebrity or some shit like that. And then he did a bit about, some new books that are coming out for kids, so-and-so's two dads and Heather's two mommies. And he's like, yeah, that's just sick, you know, except for the Heather's two mommies. I could get into that book. It was, kind of funny, I guess. But anyways,
maybe we could take the time machine back to 1993.
Yeah. But Rush Limbaugh has been in the news a lot this week. And I was, trying to pull up some Rush Limbaugh stuff, and I just got really annoyed with the whole Rush Limbaugh celebrity shit that's going on because he said that he hopes Obama fails, and then some Republicans slammed him, and then they realized, oh my God, Rush can ruin my career as a lazy-ass Republican senator. So the guy called him, one of the senators called him and groveled and said, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to say anything. I really love you. But while I was looking around for this stuff, I stumbled upon a Bill Hicks routine about Rush Limbaugh from back in the day.
This is way back in the day.
Way back in the day. And does it ever apply today? And it's about 2 minutes long. We can play it, or I could just play some snippets of it. And
is it all about Rush?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, go play the whole thing.
All right, here it is.
Speaking of Satan, I was watching Rush Limbaugh the other day. Doesn't Rush Limbaugh remind you of one of those gay guys who likes to lay in a tub while other men pee on him? Am I the only one? Can't you see his fat body in a tub while Reagan, Quayle, and Bush just stand around pissing on him, and he can't, his little piggly wiggly dick can't get hard. I can't get hard. Reagan, pee in my mouth. Well, how's that, Rush? Still can't get hard, so they call in Barbara Bush. She takes her pearls off, puts them up his ass, then squats over him, undoes her girdle. Her wrinkled, flaccid labia unfolds halfway down to her knees like some ballless scrotum. She squeezes out a link into his mouth. Finally, his dick gets half hard. A little clear bubble forms on the end with a maggot inside. The maggot pops the bubble and runs off and joins a pro-life group somewhere. Am I the only one who sees that? Or I'm not? Thank God I'm not alone. Thank God I had the insight to notice Rush Limbaugh is a scat muncher. He munches scat. Jesus, Bill. I'm so proud of that little dark poetry there. I came up with the word scat muncher, and it went from there, and I just immediately thought of Rush. Speaking.
How about that, huh?
That was cool. That would have been cool on Letterman if he played that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right, we got some. We got three calls, man.
Three calls, man.
This
That's
week.
A lot of calls.
One of them is from. It's a blast from the past. Do you remember Dave from Jerusalem?
Dave.
Yeah.
Of course.
He's moved on. And then we got a weird call from Simon, which scares me. I think he was shot somewhere during the call. And then we got a really strange call that you're going to have to tell me, is this a joke or what is going on with this call? All right.
Okay, so you're going to take them in order of how you describe them?
Yeah, Dave Simon and then strange call from a place you'll know. And you tell me, what do you think of it? All right.
Okay.
Here we go. We'll go with Dave first.
Dave.
Yeah, right. I doubt you smack tars will call me back since you're not even answering my fucking emails. This is Dave. I started talking to you guys whenever I was in Jerusalem, remember? Way back in 2006. I've been listening to your show ever since, and I'm in fucking Bangladesh now, and I've been here two fucking sorry, sad-ass fucking years. But I'm leaving in 2 weeks, and I'll be back in the U.S. So I thought I'd drop you guys a line and keep up to date. And don't worry, you've got more than four fucking fans. I guess I'm number five. Take it easy and keep it up. Well, I don't know if you can with all that piss you're drinking. And a Slanfarig, the whiskey. Can you understand that? I don't think you probably can.
No.
See you, Bush Bunnies.
Bush Bunnies. So that was Dave, our old buddy from Jerusalem, who is now in Bangladesh and is on his way back to the U.S.
Well, we can confirm that we don't receive emails from Bangladesh.
Right.
Have you ever gotten an email from Dave?
Never,
I haven't.
Never.
I mean, it doesn't even get to a anything. We don't get emails from Bangladesh.
Nothing.
What's up with that?
I don't know. Maybe they're blocking them. So anyway, the next call is, and shout out to Dave. Thanks for still listening. And that's a cool thing about podcasts, man. You can get them anywhere. You don't have to have satellite radio. You just have to have an internet connection and just plug in, and there you got the show.
That's right, John.
Right.
I wonder if he's looking forward to getting back into the States.
Yeah.
Wonder where he's going to be.
Because we got a black president now, man.
Hey, he's our president. I don't see him as black. Okay?
I know. I don't either. I don't. I'm colorblind, Scott. Yes. So anyway, here the next call is Simon, and I don't know what happened. At some point, I think he gets stabbed or something. I don't know what happens to this call, but here it is.
Hey, John and Scott. This is Simon calling from Houston. Long time, first time. I just want to make a quick comment about the MySpace, meeting people online shit. Well, I've met my current...
I don't know what happened, man. He's been abducted or something. He's rendered. He's at Gitmo. That was it.
You got to be careful when you communicate with us, I guess.
Yeah, I met my... beep. I don't know what happened. Gone. Don't know. Haven't heard from Simon yet. Back. Maybe he dropped his phone and then said, oh, I'm not going to call back. They're going to play this on the fucking show and they're going to rip on me, man.
Well, apparently he met somebody online. So we were talking about that. And also Lizard King, I saw on the forum, met his wife online.
Yeah.
Because we had that story last week that 20% of couples meet online in 2006 and 2007. It was the highest percentage of people meeting. Where'd you meet your wife, John?
Bar.
In a bar?
In a bar. Yeah, mutual friends, and she happened to be with those friends. We didn't really get along at first.
So if there was a survey and it said mutual friends and bar, would you select mutual friends or bar?
I'd say bar because I wasn't there to meet those mutual friends. I was with my group of friends who happened to run into a bunch of chicks that we knew, not necessarily to meet those chicks, because they were like hanging with some other dudes, but it just so happened.
So you'd say bar.
Yeah.
In a bar. Well, I went to high school with my lovely wife and
I did too.
And then hooked up, and she was actually my boss. And then we started carpooling.
I went to grade school with your lovely wife, my friend.
I went to Andhow Day Camp with my lovely wife.
I went there then too, but not with your wife.
No, of course not.
Nice.
So that's how we met. I don't even know if there's a category for that. We met in high school, but then we hooked up when we worked together. So look, I guess
Andhow Day Camp. Check.
I guess I would say at work we met. At work.
At work. Nice. So, okay, this next call, a very strange call. I don't know. Well, I'll just play it. Here it is.
Hello, this is Chris Hoffmeyer, chaplain from Lutheran General Hospital, and I'm calling regarding Robert Clark. He gave me this number. And if you know Robert, I'd ask that you'd come here to Lutheran General Hospital in Park Ridge, Illinois, and ask to be connected with the chaplain. Thank you. Bye.
What?
Lutheran General Hospital.
Are they ready
Hospital?
To read? Last Robert rites? Clark is last rites?
I don't know,
man.
You
should probably check into that.
I don't know Robert Clark. But apparently Robert Clark or somebody gave the hospital the TTN hotline. So Robert Clark, if you're listening, you need to go over to Lutheran General and talk to the chaplain.
Maybe it was Robert Clark who gave the number.
I don't know, man.
What is it? What is your recorded message when somebody gets the voicemail?
It's like, thanks for calling the TTN hotline. You know? You've just called the TTN hotline. Leave a message because we're going to make fun of it or something like that. And then,
were they reaching out to Robert Clark or was Robert Clark the one who made the call?
She
on
says,
his app?
Well, let's listen.
Hello, this is Chris Hoffmeyer, chaplain from Lutheran General Hospital, and I'm calling regarding Robert Clark. He gave me this number, and if you...
There it is. He gave me this number.
Hmm.
And if you see Robert Clark, tell him I called and to come and see the chaplain.
Oh.
So maybe somebody in the hospital didn't make it or something. I don't know.
Hmm. Robert Clark gave me this number to reach him.
Yeah.
So I'm leaving a message. If you see Robert Clark, tell him to call the chaplain.
No, to come to the hospital and see the chaplain.
And see the chaplain.
Yeah.
Hmm. Hmm.
Yeah. How about that?
I wonder if that mystery will ever be solved, John.
Well, let's see if Robert Clark calls us, because he apparently has the number.
Hey, this is
He's
Robert Clark.
He's giving it out to all the local hospitals.
Hey, Did man. You guys get a message for me?
Hey, man.
Listening to those calls, it makes me reminisce about calls from Ass Plunger.
Right.
Remember those calls? Yeah. We never hear from Ass Plunger again.
Yeah, I don't know, man. The one time he called us and women were like diving into a kiddie pool full of Jell-O. Dude, man, I wish you guys were here, man. These chicks are diving into a kiddie pool full of Jell-O. Yeah! It's Ass Plunger.
No All right, doubt. Man, what do we got? We got Andrew's Minute.
Andrew's Minute. Can't tell what's in it. Yeah. Andrew's Minute. Andrew's Minute. Can you guess what's in it? No. What's he gonna say? Will he say something? Andrew's Minute.
That limey cocksucker can rot in hell for all I care.
John and Scott, it's Andrew. I hope you're both well. You complain that I haven't sent you any minutes. But I did. I sent you four. You just decided to spurt them all in one episode. Second thing, you talked about giving up drinking. I gave up drinking for 3 months last year. It wasn't as hard as I thought. And I slept an awful lot better off the booze. I know that's something you guys like to do. Sleep, that is. Lastly, funding the recovery of our economies. It occurs to me, we spend all this money funding the recovery, but we're not really spending our money. We're spending our kids' money. We're borrowing their money. Why don't we just take the pain that we're supposed to take today and give our kids a break tomorrow? Why should we burden them with all the debts and taxes just so that we can have a nice time today? What do you think?
You limey fuck!
He puts his own sound effects in, man.
I think spurt is a good word.
Spurt.
I like that word. It's like moist.
He's a spurt.
Yeah, what do you think about that, John?
He decided to spurt it. Yeah, he's right. I mean, you know, but I don't know how we're going to do it. I think it's so fucked up. You know,
here's the way I look at it. I think that, I think we went through the same thing with Reagan, not to this degree, of course, but Reagan ran up the deficit and at the time we were talking about our grandkids and paying for it and shit like that. And then the interwebs took off. And I mean, there was a bubble there, but from a government perspective, the U.S. had wiped out its deficit and was in the red.
Yeah.
Economic term. So maybe something like that will happen again, and there won't be a huge debt for the kids. And the other thing that may happen is a massive computer virus wipes out all records in existence. And we start over again.
Yeah, but I don't like the idea of the, and I hope they change this. The Republicans, since Reagan, came up with the supply side economics by incentivizing people to produce. And in my business, we are definitely not looking at supply side economics. We look at the demand side of it because we want to keep inventories low. And because there's a cost of carrying inventories, and when there's a very competitive market, it doesn't make sense unless you are so competitive and the competition is based on how fast you can deliver to a customer, for example, then maybe supply is necessary. But in supply side economics, they talk about incentives like income tax, capital gains, and all that. So it incentivizes people to produce, to supply goods and services. And I don't think that's working. It just doesn't seem to work at all. When you take away all those regulations and all that stuff, and there's nobody keeping an eye on it, it just blows up into the bubble, like you said. It was lucky with the technology bubble, was they were actually making something. You know, I remember buying some stocks in, I can't remember that modem company. They were Mount Prospect. What were they called? Do you remember?
No.
Anyways, a company that made modems. I can't remember the name of them. But Cisco and some of these other companies and Linksys and all that, they were making modems and switches and routers and all that stuff. And the web was booming. And yeah, it was a boom. And everybody was throwing their money at it like crazy. They were overvaluing a company's stock 10, 20, 500 times its actual value, jumping on board on this shit. And then it blew up. And it's the same thing happened with the real estate market. And then the W, who's, you know, you're listening to the radio, and all these conservative talking heads are talking about how it's the Democrats that caused this. Well, okay, let's say they did. But 8 years of the W, with all the power being in the first 4 years of the Republican side, and they stood by and didn't do anything except take credit for the real estate bubble, which completely collapsed on top of itself. And now we're...
Yeah, and you know, the other thing, interwebs, I'm not sure what the political scene was at the time, but technology is what brought us the interwebs. And then you got the W for 8 years that just slashed science funding and technology funding for religious reasons.
Yeah.
Of all things. And are we going to be able to come up with the innovations, or are we going to have an 8-year delay? I know that Obama's done a lot to turn that around. He's starting to fund stem cells and all that other stuff, but the W and his attack on science and technology, there's another thing that is going to affect this country moving forward with innovation and generating revenue.
But I'm wondering if what Andrew's saying is that, okay, we shouldn't let our kids be faced with this. So we should, I'm not sure, I don't know what he's saying, but it could be let the economy collapse so the market is corrected and then start over. But
right.
What happens then? I mean,
kids will suffer now or they suffer later.
Right. They're going to suffer either way. And, you know, my wife.
Not necessarily suffer later. I mean, we could get hit by an asteroid.
Yeah.
It's over.
Well, you know, that disaster movie, the guy who did Day After Tomorrow is coming out with this movie in July called 2012, My Friend.
2012, My Friend? That seems like a long...
Yeah, that's the name of the... 2012, My Friend is the name of the movie. No, it's 2012, and it's...
Based on the Mayan calendar crap?
All that stuff, yeah. Somebody came into my office this week going on about that. Oh, yeah, it's real, man. It was all over the Discovery Channel or the whatever.
Yeah, they could predict the end of civilization in 2012, but they couldn't predict the end of their own race and culture.
Right.
They didn't predict a black president either.
Well, I think they just ran out of room on the calendar, on the stone tablet.
What do you mean they ran out of room? They didn't have any more stones?
Yeah, to it's like a big circular wheel that they can, based on, I guess, where the sun is or something, and then they figure out what the days are. And I think they ran out of room on the wheel. They only went so far in the future.
Nice.
I think they had like a Y2K issue with their wheel.
I see.
Right.
Very good.
So is Phil coming or what?
I don't know. Is he coming to your place? Or what's he doing?
I don't know. I don't think he's coming to my place.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, because I have Star Trek doors. That,
do you?
I don't know if you remember that. Yeah. I don't know if you remember that. So if he were to come here,
he'd have to use the Star Trek doors to get in?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Star Trek doors. Yeah. Cool. What do they make a sound?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Don't you remember when we did this last time? I Skyped and he came over to my house. Yeah.
Right.
I just had him installed. So.
Are they still working?
Yeah, they're still working. Yeah.
Can I hear them?
Well, if Phil comes over, you'd be able to hear him.
Boy, I'd really like to hear what they sound like. Just
maybe we'll have to wait, you know, until next week.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not going to make it, you know.
No.
Maybe we can go out with some practice tunes. Do we have any new practice tunes?
Yes, we do. I kind of fucked them up, though. Where did I put them? Where did I put them? We have... Let me sort by date here. We have If I Needed Someone. But when I click on it, Sweet Emotion comes up, and I don't know why. And then clip a Sweet Emotion. And Sweet Emotion comes up. So that I fucked up something there. Watusi Strange Vertigo. I Will Always. Rain.
Oh, Rain. Yeah, that's a good one. Rain. I think we made it through that one.
Paranoid. Manic Monday. I need to know.
No, yeah. That wasn't so good.
No?
I think Rain. I think we should go out with Rain.
It wasn't bad. Rain? All right, yeah. How about rain? I'm John.
I'm Scott.
And we're
going to... Episode 159.
159, in the bag, in the can.
In the can.
And we're going to take it away with Rain from Practice.
When it rains and shines, when the sun shines, it's just a state of mind. listening to John and Scott on Total Talk Nonsense.